And if you would, turn to page 136 of the Purple Liturgy Book. Today, this Sunday, as you can see in the Missal, has two names. One, we call it the Sunday of the Last Judgment, because the Gospel reading just had to do with the Last Judgment. And it's also called Meat Fair Sunday, which refers to the fact that today is the last day that we will eat meat before Easter. So the fast is, we're entering it somewhat starting tomorrow, where no meat will be allowed. So the Gospel reading had to do with the Last Judgment, but it's the Epistle reading that I'm going to talk about that has to do with the food, okay? It's called Meat Fair Sunday because, like I said, we won't be eating meat today. And the fathers put this epistle reading on this day because St. Paul does mention eating meat. As a matter of fact, he says, if eating food or eating meat is going to scandalize someone, I'll never eat meat. Okay? Thank God that doesn't apply to all of us, that we will never eat meat again, although it may seem like it for the next month and a half or whatever it is, but whatever. So that's why it's here, you know, on this day. Okay, now, what was he referring to? Now, in some of the other epistle readings that we discuss, we don't really need to know the context because the lesson in it is relevant even without context. In this case, though, as you read, there's some background that we kind of need to know, at least to kind of understand. Back in those days, there were pagan temples, and you could take, you know, the pagan worship included taking foods and meats and stuff for the idols, and they would, you know, almost kind of like the Jewish temple, where you would take stuff, part of it would be sacrificed to the idols, part of it would be burnt, I guess, part of it would be stay at the temple, and part of it would be given back to the people who offered it, and, you know, like a blessing, maybe like prosphora, or I don't know, you know, I mean, there's some general sort of principles as far as sacrifices go. And so some of the Christian believers who, there's two kinds now that Paul is talking about. He's talking about a man of wisdom. In other words, a man of knowledge. What does he call them? There's the weak, and then there's the people who kind of supposedly were smarter and kind of figured things out, okay? So the people, you know, who were smarter in their own sort of sense, they said, well, you know what? There's only one God. So the idols aren't gods. So what's going on in that temple is nothing. So that's really not a sacrifice to anything. So that food is really not being sacrificed to anything. And therefore, it's just food. Probably really good food, though. It was probably like, you know, the best cuts of meat and the best, you know, maybe organic, you know, or from... Anyway. So they were going and eating, and then some of the other Christians were saying, oh my gosh, I mean, these people who they're on parish council, or, you know, they have a theology degree, and they're going to eat these things. I mean, they must know what they're doing. So I guess it's okay to go to temples, but being weak in their conscience, they also were probably weak in their knowledge, and so they thought it was confusion for them, and these weaker Christians now were thinking that maybe there is something to idols, or maybe, you know, or is this bad, or is this good, or maybe I should actually honor the... There's something, okay? Idols are good. We used to worship the idols, now we worship Christ, blah, blah, blah. It was confusing. It was confusing for them. So people brought it up to Paul, and so that's what he's responding to in this letter, is that issue. Is it okay to go to the temples as a, you know, secular pagan and a believing Christian, or I don't know, what do you want to call it, or even go to other people's house that were pagans and have dinner and, you know, eat the foods that were offered. And so Paul was not really sympathetic. You can read the commentaries, you know, that have been written by the fathers. Was not really sympathetic to these wiser Christians, you know, because they were just finding some kind of opportunity and justification to eat good food, you know. So that's what he's referring to. And he's saying, look, if something I do is going to scandalize a brother Christian of mine, I'm not only going to not do that, I won't do that forever. I will not eat meat. That is not a rule of our church, that we will not eat meat forever. But we see his intention. Okay, now let's try to make some points here of what we can learn from this. He says that food is not going to recommend us to God. You know, when we go to the judgment day, you know, he's not going to say, did you eat, you know, prime rib, or did you have USDA, or did you get it from some other place that didn't, you know, was your food good? No, it's virtue, not food, but virtue will commend and recommend us to God. So ingesting food does not make us any better virtuous, and not ingesting food doesn't diminish us in our virtue. Now, there is virtue involved, however, in our intentions for eating and what we do. For example, it is not a virtue to eat simply for pleasure. Correct eating is that which is done for nutrition and with thanksgiving to God. Okay? Fasting, or more correctly, abstinence from certain foods during Lent is not optional. I mean, now, after so many centuries, you know, it's become the practice. Lent is a thing that Orthodox Christians do. So if we were to say, and I spoke about this maybe last year, that, you know, if we were to say, well, you know, food does not recommend us to God, not eating us, St. Paul just said it, you know, so if I fast or don't fast, it really doesn't matter. It kind of does matter. It kind of does matter if you simply approach Lent with disdain, with just dismissing it and saying it's not for me, I don't believe in it, or whatever. That would not recommend us to God, okay? Now, as far as presenting a scandal to others, being seen eating during Lent non-Lenten foods could possibly be scandalous to others, especially if you're in a position of, you know, being in the know or authority in the church. And that's why you may have heard there might even be priests and bishops who, you know, don't keep the fasts, and that can be very scandalous to the faithful. As a matter of fact, there are very strict canons and rules that punish clergy who do not keep the fast. And clergy includes altar boys, readers, choir members, and the son. Anyway, what else might there be that could cause others to stumble? And I was trying, you know, I was racking my brain, living as we do in the 21st century, you know, Charlotte, you know, what could possibly there be? I mean, is yoga something? I mean, does anybody, when we practice yoga, does anyone think that we're actually doing the meditations of yoga, or is it the yoga exercises? But that kind of approach, that maybe. Now, justifications that we make are not always sound. There really is evil involved in idol worship. So when Paul was saying, you know, you've put these two and two together, there's no other God, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, in that case, really, idol worship is demon worship. So sacrifices, there really was some kind of evil involved. And nowadays we could say there's evil involved in tarot cards, in, you know, fortune telling, seances, Ouija boards, that kind of stuff that people do that kind of think, oh, it's really nothing. There's really nothing. There really is. There is another evil world out there, okay? So it's also important, therefore, so that we don't have weak people and weak in conscience, that we can all be knowledgeable in a humble way. We really do need to invest time and resources in educating ourselves, educating our families, and educating our church community so that no one be considered weak in having partial knowledge and jumping to wrong conclusions, you know, about things. We also need to pay attention to ourselves and not be looking to see what other people are doing. That would keep us from, you know, wondering, is that good or bad? You know, ask your priest, ask your advisors, whatever it is. So there's another thing we want to do, is not look at and compare and judge other people. And there, come back to that one good rule of Lent that I've said other times, that while we want to be encouraging to one another and each other as far as keeping the fast and, you know, in our spiritual life in general, the good rule is not to talk about what you do personally and or what you don't do, and therefore you don't fall into pride or bragging or comparing or scandal, because you just say, you know what, I don't talk about it. But let's do the best we can, because ultimately it's good for us, and everything that the church teaches and brings to us and presents us to do is ultimately good for us. So let's stand and pray.